Take Command is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Anybody, anywhere,
It's time to take command.
The Cardiac Commanders are the Clutch Commanders!
With former NFL tight end, Logan Paulson.
This pass caught by Paulson, the tight end.
And from 106.7 The Fan, Grant Paulson.
Take Command coming your way after a Commanders loss at the Green Bay Packers at Lambeau Field tonight. Logan's got post-game responsibilities in Green Bay, and then he's jumping on the plane with the team to fly back late tonight. So I'm joined on Take Command by one of his former teammates, one of my good buddies for many, many years, and the head coach of the undefeated 2-0 Stonebridge Bulldogs. We got Kedrick Golston, one of the longest tenured Redskins of the 2000s when he was playing on Take Command. Ked, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing good, Grant. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. So final score 27-18, probably not indicative of this game. This felt a little bit like a butt-whooping to me in the sense that Washington, they were just a step behind kind of in every way, it felt like. The Packers offense had a lot of running room and were able to make plays, and things came fairly easily. Flip side for the Commanders, when they had the football, nothing came easily, and it was a poor night for a lot of guys. What did you see between these two teams that were both considered among the elites in the NFC?
You know, I agree with you totally, especially in the first half. It seemed extremely one-sided. I think Green Bay had almost 200 yards of total offense, kind of did what they want, but it was still a relatively close football game. The scoreboard didn't indicate that the game was so lopsided as it was. So, you know, I don't think it's all negative. I liked kind of the poise of what I saw out of the Commanders. They didn't really, you know, there was points in that game where it really could have got out of hand. The offense seemed to kind of stay on course, try to stay on time, and they didn't try to do things that I thought was kind of out of their personality. But I think Green Bay just, you know, a short week, home, two home games for them. I thought Green Bay was ready to play, and hats off to them. But it's still early in the football season. This team hasn't played a lot together. We know that because of the preseason. And, you know, Terry's still trying to get up to speed.
Yeah, I don't want to make excuses, right? Because this is going to be one of those conversations where I think you just got to call it what it is. Like, this was fairly ugly at times, and it was a bad loss, and they got to go back to the drawing board. That said, one of the things on paper that I did not love is short week Thursday night football against a really good team. It's just a bad collection of you know, things. You're going on the road. You're turning this around really quickly to Thursday night. You're playing in a hostile environment, and you're playing maybe the best team in the NFC, not the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, all of that does not bode very well. Now, that having been said, you still got to find a way to show a little better than they did early in this game. Let's start with the offense. Jaden Daniels early again was not overly sharp throwing the football. He missed on several throws. There was one specific throw that stands out to me where he had Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt kind of on a check down or a dump down, and he missed him like hot and hard and nowhere near him. It just throws that he didn't really miss to that extent last year. And it's one throw. It's not the end of the world, but we saw, you know, a tick off last week. Then early in this game, not quite sharp. It seems to me like we can blame it on a lot of things. If it's zero throws in the preseason, or maybe it's just a small sample through two games through less than a calendar week, but he has not been at the same level with his accuracy early as he was last year, I would say.
Yeah, but I also, you kind of got to give some credit to Green Bay's defense. You know what I mean? Obviously, they were doing some things that made him hesitate with the ball. He looked a little unsure at times. And so hats off to them, and they was able to, you know, disrupt him, move him off his spot, not allow him to get comfortable with rushing four. Obviously, we know about Parsons, who had a really good game for them, but that defensive line really affected the passing game. And you could tell based off of just Jaden going through his progressions that he wasn't really settled in the pocket and wasn't comfortable. And when he tried to run, where to extend drives and to create, you know, to give the offense more opportunities, they did a good job of rallying to him.
You mentioned Micah Parsons. On the stat sheet, it'll say two tackles and one half sack. I mean, that does not begin to tell the story. I can't wait to see some of the pass rush win rate numbers and the pressures generated via NGS and PFF in some of these places. But he hit Jaden Daniels, according to the NFL stats, three times in this game. I would have taken the over on that. He just felt like, to me, it was a loud performance. He lived in the backfield. He beat Josh Connerly pretty badly on a hold that turned into a sack at one point. But he consistently won at the line of scrimmage, whether they brought him and looped him around on Allegretti, whether they got him one-on-one with Connerly. He seemed to kind of have his way in this game.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously a luxury piece for that defense. We know what he's been in the NFL, and they moved him around. I mean, he hit Jaden three times. I believe he had at least two or three holding calls, and he was disruptive, and that's why they got him over there. So hats off to them. You know, Washington's offensive line did not look good tonight. You know what I mean? And Green Bay's defensive line applied the pressure that they needed to apply. You know, that being said, you know, with coming off an NFC championship game last year, I do have confidence that Washington will correct these issues. And they faced a good unit tonight and didn't work out the way that they thought it would.
Kedrick Olsen in for Logan Paulson on Take Command. I'm Grant Paulson with you after a 27-18 Packers win at Lambeau Field over the Commanders. You know, to drill down a little bit on the O-line, I really was impressed and loved what I saw from them against the Giants. And that is a big boy front. Like, they draft Abdul Carter at the top of the board to go with Brian Burns, who had almost 70 pressures last year. Dexter Lawrence is one of the best D tackles at your position. You played in the entire National Football League. They've still got Kayvon Thibodeau, who made a couple of plays. And so to deal with that group the way they did was so encouraging. You're right. It felt like a regressive kind of performance in some ways. Explain to fans how it can happen, whether it's just a matchup thing or how we get to a point where it looked so good Sunday and you fast forward 5 days later and it can look like this tonight. Because it's one thing to just say, oh, the Packers are a lot better team than the Giants. Well, no kidding. But the defensive front, as good as Green Bay's is, and it's awesome, there's no doubt about it, it's not like the Giants don't have a really good one either. And it seemed like Washington just had a better plan and better success against them.
Well, I think if you look at Green Bay's offense and how they were able to move the ball and the lack of offensive plays that Washington had in the first half, going back to the New York Giants game, Washington was in control of that game from the kickoff to when the game was over, right? And so there was never a moment where they seemed stressed because they always had the game under control. This was a little bit differently. I mean, we can say we want to say we're dealing with human beings, and I think Green Bay had run some like 20-something offensive plays, and Washington had run six offensive plays. So obviously there was some angst there of just getting to an offensive rhythm that we didn't see for pretty much all night until kind of the one drive late in the fourth quarter when they went tempo. So matchups are matchups. I mean, on paper, the New York Giants have a really successful, productive defensive line, but they didn't show that last Sunday. Green Bay, we knew, had some talent, obviously, with Parsons headlining that group. And they came out there and they produced. And like I said, you know, it's just one of those things where their offense was able to move the ball. They were able to – Green Bay's defensive line was able to tee off and rush the passer. And without going back and looking at the tape – made Jaden feel uncomfortable and making him get off his spot. And so maybe they saw something off of last year's tape that they liked, that maybe obviously, you know, he has kind of his things that he likes to do, whether it's setting up left in the pocket, setting up right in the pocket, and they didn't allow him to feel comfortable.
Yeah, you look at the passing game for Washington, just to go back for a second, in the end with some, you know, garbage time, late second half stuff, Daniels ends up with 200 passing yards and two touchdowns. Ertz ends up having a statistical strong game with 64 yards and a touchdown. But they couldn't really get Debo going untracked in this game. And if you go back to week one, he was the focal point of the offense, right? Seven targets, seven catches, 77 yards. He ends up with seven grabs for 44, had an impressive touchdown catch on a 12-yarder where he stayed up and got over the goal line. Like, he's a scratcher and clawer. He's going to fight. He had a great kick return. But whether it's him or someone will say tomorrow, oh, they got to get more out of Terry, five catches, 48 yards. I think you hit on something. They just weren't on the field enough for so much of this game. When you go three and out, long drive, three and out, long drive, like, you're into the second quarter, basically. You've run six plays. So much of everyone getting to eat is about, you know, the quantity of the snaps. You can't all get what you want if you're not running a lot of plays. And in the end, they did run 65 plays, but a lot of those were, you know, well after this game was decided, I felt like. So I don't even know if you're looking for standouts offensively, I would definitely say Ertz. I thought he was really good. He had a 13-yard yak play where he made a guy miss and scored a touchdown. But otherwise, whether it's a drop here by Noah Brown or you know, a popcorn pass there to Terry McLaurin or whatever, you're hard-pressed to kind of find guys that shine tonight. It just seemed like Green Bay's plan was really, really good. The corner Nixon, I thought, was unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Green Bay's defense, you know, shut down Washington's offense, you know, and I think we're still so new in this year that we remember some of the highlights and, you know, 500 plus yards of offense off of last year. But this is a new group. They have a new offensive line that they're trying to work together, and it's going to take some time, obviously, to have to bring Debo. What is he going to be here is the real question. We know what he was in San Francisco. What is he going to be here, and how do you marry that with Ertz and Terry and the rest of that bunch so that everybody can get their touches? But at the end of the day, like you said, there wasn't enough plays to go around for anybody necessarily to get in a rhythm. And it was a good defensive game. They had a good game plan. The interesting thing moving forward, you know, with this kind of mini bye, and I believe they have the Raiders next week, is are the Raiders going to try to duplicate the game plan that Green Bay has defensively? And not to say that anybody's figured out Jaden and Kingsbury's offense, but, you know, the more tape you get on people and the more you kind of figure out how they call games with a certain bunches, how are they going to adapt to move forward to the offense that, you know, moved the ball at times at will last year?
Let's talk running game for just a second. Eckler in this game is lost to an injury. Look, serious. I don't want to sit here and play doctor, but we've all kind of seen that non-contact injury grabbing at the ankle. Looked like an Achilles, possibly. We'll have to wait and see what we hear, but he looked so dejected on the bench. I mean, my heart broke for him. That's one of two what appeared to be very serious injuries tonight, without trying to do too much guessing. But Dietrich Wise with a quad got carted off. He was very emotional. Every single player on the team came over to the cart. He is such a good dude, kid. I don't know if you've had a chance to meet him yet. I love him. It kind of like you, when you were such a pro and good with the media and I had great rapport with you. Like, matter of fact, after the Giants game, I told him in the locker room after I talked to him, I said, you know, I just love how you're so refreshing. I'm like, you're such a pro, man. Like, I really enjoy getting to talk to you. And anyway, it just so sad. Like, both of those guys, before we move on, we could talk about those injuries. But Wise was brought in here to be a run stuffer, to provide size, to help them get better against the run. They obviously got worse in this game after he got hurt. And then with Eckler, what an invaluable piece on offense. He's their pass catcher. He's their 2 and 4 minute back. He's their pass protector, by the way. They don't really have a guy that shines in that area other than maybe McNichols. So he'll now become the Eckler in this offense, I guess, for the foreseeable future. But those feel like two massive losses before we really know the timeline. It would seem like both of them are at least going to be injuries that last beyond a few games.
Yeah, no doubt. When you lose, you know, obviously Eckler's been here. McNichols has just gotten, you know, I think when that happens, like, it's not just the impact of their production on the field, but what does that look like in preparation with the younger players on the team and just the team morale? Now, I have total confidence in Dan Quinn and his staff to kind of rally around those guys and to get ready to play. But when that kind of happens in game, you know, that is tough. You know, it's a part of the game. We can't make excuses because we know injuries are part of it. But like you said, they were brought in here to do specific things, and now who's going to fill in those roles when you plan all offseason to have a certain guys do certain things, and now those guys hopefully – it looks like, you know, might be out for an extended period of time. How do you adapt to not having those players available and, you know, trying to scheme it up both offensively and defensively to put your team in the best situation to go out there and produce and win football games?
Yeah, Dietrich Wise comes in from New England, only team he'd ever played for with the Patriots, former Super Bowl champion, just an immediate leader. I just think you could tell when a guy gets hurt like that and is on the cart and his teammates all gather around him and are basically, you know, fighting with each other to get to the cart first. Like, that is everything you need to know about a guy. As he left the field and Bobby Wagner shouting at him, you know, we got you, we got you. That was sad. That was hard to watch. But Dietrich Wise, Austin Ekeler, both suffering what seemed to be pretty serious injuries. But speaking of Ekeler, I bring him up initially to say the running game, overall, it was 15. Well, take Jaden Daniels out of it. Let's just say 12 carries for running backs for 34 yards, which is sub 3 per pop. Ja'Cory Cross-Kemaret was more effective, over 4 per carry, 4 for 17. But I felt like, you know, I know they were down a couple possessions late and then you go away from it. But even early in the game, you know, they tried and had very little success. And Cliff pretty quickly decided, let's spread them out and try to throw the football. I know a lot of people will take issue with that. I didn't really have a problem with that because coming into the game, kid, go back to last week. Like, the Lions, who love running the ball, could not run on them. 76% of their rushing plays last week to kick off the year, the running back was hitting the backfield. And so this is what Green Bay is built to do now. Then you would run the ball 4 times for 5 yards. And I think Cliff said, all right, we got to try something else. We can't stay on the field. But they went away from it. So what you end up with is 11 combined carries for your running backs in this game, which in the end is probably not going to cut it in a game that, you know, until the fourth quarter was fairly close in terms of the score, even if it was lopsided on paper.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, these coaches spend so much time looking at matchups and looks, right? And so from a game planning standpoint, if you get the certain look you want with the certain coverage and call, you're going to run your offense. And obviously, Cliff and the staff like what they saw in the passing game. And so you want to do that. And that's NFL football. You know what I mean? You don't have Terry McLaurin, Deebo Samuels, and the rest of that group and not try to get the ball in their hands because they're some of your better playmakers. When Washington's at its best, they are running the football with a ton of misdirection, orbit motion, GT type of plus one runs with Jaden in the backfield. And so I would love to see them get back to some of that because it puts a ton of stress on the defense because it forces the defense to be a whole lot more disciplined. When one, the quarterback can run the ball. Two, you have Deebo Samuels flying across the formation. And then you add on top of that, you know, guards and tackles pulling. I would like to see them do more of that because of the stress.
Why didn't they, in your opinion? I think that's a great observation.
It's hard to say because, maybe it's a timing thing. You know what I mean? This is all speculative, not being, you know, in that organization. But if you look at what they did last year and the amount of stress they put on defensive fronts and defensive coordinators, I would like to see them get more back to that because – as a defensive coach, you always trying to figure out where you can get extra guys to the point of attack. Well, when you have orbit motions and Jaden can run the ball, pulling linemen, you can no longer guess and cheat, and it's kind of like one-on-one, right? And so we would all agree that in most stadiums Jaden steps into, he's going to be one of the most athletic people on the field, and you want to take advantage of that.
Kedrick Golston spent over a decade in the NFL in Washington with the Redskins, joining us on Take Command, filling in for Logan. I'm Grant. The Commanders lose 27-18. They were down 27-10 with 3 minutes to go before they scored a late touchdown, 10-yard pass from Daniels to Samuel, and then a two-point conversion to Luke McCaffrey. Kudos to Luke McCaffrey, by the way. Got on the field, made a 19-yard catch in helping to replace Noah Brown, who was also lost to an injury in this game. Not sure how serious his injury was. Another sneaky, significant injury they suffered was John Bates, who's one of the better blocking tight ends in the entire NFL. Logan and I talk a lot about him on this pod regularly. I mean, there aren't many tight ends in the entire league that are more successful in line right now, moving people around in the run game, than John Bates. And you could tell the difference when he wasn't out there to help Josh Connerly. Let's talk Connerly for a second. I feel for him, Ked, because his first 2 weeks in the NFL, think about this, Rookie first round pick. Talk about getting thrown into the deep end. Brian Burns, who had 70 pressures almost last year by himself. And then Micah Parsons tonight, last week, 22 of 29 snaps were over top of the right tackle, and they certainly moved him to right tackle again tonight. But now you're like, oh, thank God. Okay, you had these two games. You get to move on. Max Crosby waiting in the wings. Like, you can't make this up. And I know it's the league, bro. I know, like, every week is another dog on the other side. But this is ridiculous. I mean, he has struggled. I get that. I'm not trying to make excuses for him. But this is a murderer's row schedule for a rookie tackle out of the chute.
Well, not only a rookie tackle, but one that's moving from left tackle to right tackle. And that's two different planets if you've played to position. And if you look at kind of some of his misses, it's to me, you can tell he's comfortable playing left tackle. If you look at somehow the breakdown in his fundamentals, what I like about him, though, and what you can see is they believe in him and his preparation. And this is just growing pains. And he's growing in front of our eyes against some really good football players. Because at the end of the day, as a coach, if he was struggling to grasp or to understand, you think they would put him, you know, take him out, let him kind of get his composure, but he's in there battling, right? And so for me, we're going to reap the benefits of this later in the year because of all the reps and the exposure that he's getting against all pro pseudo defensive players of the year, just coming at him, right? And so he's out there competing, he's getting holding calls, but I like his body language. I like his energy when he gets to the line of scrimmage. You can see he's fighting his tail off, and he has to learn. You know what I mean? And one day we'll look back on these first couple of weeks and say, hey, we remember when, but now I feel like we have one of the better right tackles in the league.
He's going to get there. I mean, athletically, the way he moves, you could just see it. He's got the goods. But, yeah, it's been trial by fire pretty clearly to this point. The rest of the offensive line we kind of got into already. I don't know how much we've got to do there. One more on the offense, and that's on Terry McLaurin. Through two games, it's like 7 grabs, 75 yards. He was more involved tonight, 9 targets, 5 catches, 48 yards, long of 14. It's a slow start to the season. He has had those before. Do you think he is in any way affected by no camp, no summer, any of that? Or is this just kind of, you know, an easy thing to point to after two games, but non-factor?
I mean, you know, obviously, you know Terry better than I do. He's a pro's pro. You know what I mean? You know, even though he wasn't getting those reps mentally, he was out there. He's in top-tier shape. And we were having these same conversations this time last year about him not getting the ball, right? And then you fast forward to the end of the year, and those targets came, and that production came, right? So I just also think it's, one, early in the season, you're trying to figure out what you have and who you have. Now, you're trying to win football games, but ultimately, you're trying to build the most prolific offense that you can, right, with inserting a Deebo Samuels, with some of the changes in the running game, so on and so forth. So, you know, at the end of the day, you play every game to win it, but you're also trying to develop an offense that can hopefully make the playoffs and compete for a championship, right? So, that's not to say that he's not a huge part of that, because he is. But at the end of the day, let's not take this all sample size of 2 weeks and try to, you know, write the book for the rest of the year, right? Let's give it a few more weeks. We know who Terry is. We know that he's going to be a huge part of this offense. So let's just see how that kind of maturates throughout the season.
All right, defensive side of the ball, Kedrick Golston. Let's get you to home base here, where you played so many years in the league on the defensive line. You know, the biggest story out of week one for this team was that defensive front dominating the Giants' offensive line. Javon Kinlaw looked like the $15 million man they paid him to be. Daron Payne had a monster game. You know, he was much more quiet in this game, obviously. But everybody kind of ate in that first game. What did you see up front from the defensive line in this game?
You know, I saw some flashes of what we saw last week. I thought LaFleur and Love just had a really good scheme to kind of eliminate them. You look at a lot of the throws, it was on time. You know what I mean? And sometimes they max protect, and the defensive line didn't get the pass rush that we're accustomed to, and that's what those guys are paid to do. And that system is built around. But, you know, I would think those guys know that they can be better, will be better. And, you know, it was just – unfortunate that, you know, early on I thought they competed. I thought they were tackling well. But I believe that what was that? When the tight end caught the ball in the seam for 54 yards and then kind of started just giving up chunk play after chunk play. That was a little disappointing. And, you know, it's just hard to say, right? It's complementary football, right? In order to get sacks, you got to cover. In order to cover, in order to get interceptions, you got to create pressure, right? So it's one or the other, and you could just see that, you know, you got to take your hat off to the Green Bay offense because they looked like they had a really good plan against what Washington was trying to do.
On Tuesday, August 26th, it's FanDuel Futures Day. A new holiday for football fans. It's 24 hours of deals on all your football season predictions. So take a flyer on the MVP race. Jaden Daniels is 10-1. Crown your champion in August. The Commanders, 19-1 odds. Or parlay your division winner dark horses like Washington together. Mark your calendars. This is your day for your hunches and hot takes, your calls, and your odds. Visit the FanDuel app today and start planning your futures bets now. Because Futures Day is one day and one day only. FanDuel, play your game.
Must be 21 plus and present in Virginia. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Second level. Frankie Louvu was so good last year. He's been outstanding. I've noticed him. He's missed a handful of tackles in the early going of the season. Now, that's going to happen, right? Especially early on when you were practicing and playing. You guys had so much more time on the grass. Have you noticed that as a trend at all in today's NFL? Do you think that's fair to say that the tackling early in the season just isn't up to par, or is that not a good reason to suggest why someone isn't getting guys on the ground to the same extent that we've become accustomed to?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of football in this day and age is you do a lot of football-like drills, right? But football is about tackling people to the ground. And because of player safety and the lengthening of the season and longevity, you want to keep players up. But ultimately, you understand, even though you preach it and you rep it on bags and in controlled situations, that it is a work in progress. Tackling early in the season. The one thing that you do like about Louvu is that if he misses a tackle, he jumps right back up and you see him show back up in the frame, right? So you know the effort and the energy is there. Now it's just going to be about, you know, him finishing those tackles, right? So that doesn't really bother me and worry me because I saw the way that he played last year. I see the effort and the intensity in which he's going about it now. It's just, you know, a matter of kind of like in the past game, he's got to get his timing down with his angles and his same foot, same shoulder, and just some of those detailed things out that I know that they're working on and they're preaching and that they'll correct.
Back end, Marshawn Lattimore and the corners coming out of week one, feeling good about themselves. This was a much tougher challenge, it seemed like. Lattimore specifically, a couple more penalties tonight, got picked on a little bit early. What I noticed they were doing, Kedrick, was they were going motion, and instead of Washington passing those things off and kind of communicating where he would kind of stop and stay on one half the field and someone else would pick up the motion man, he was coming all the way across the formation, like following. And a few different times, particularly with Wicks, you know, they would basically motion him all the way across, then run an outbreaker toward the sideline. He's running from one side of the field to the other, and they would get him by a step or two. And they just kept going back to the well on that. I mean, it worked a few times. It was not, you know, a great night for him necessarily. But what did you see in terms of usage or matchup there?
Well, you know, when you're in man-to-man coverage, that's what you're going to get. You know what I mean? And Green Bay's scheme stressed that out, right? And so last week we talked about how this defense was playing a lot of man-to-man zero type coverage, and they came out there this week, and that's who they're going to be as a defense. And Green Bay stressed them out, you know what I mean, and never really did, you know, the Commanders defense never did anything to kind of get Green Bay out of their rhythm, right? So from a secondary standpoint, right, you want to play man, but sometimes you got to get those guys a little bit of a break and drop them off in the zone. And I'm sure they did that without, like you said, looking at the all 22 tape. But, you know, Lattimore, I think he got two penalties last week, right? So he's obviously a really physical, aggressive corner, right? And so people are going to, try to take advantage of that. One, they're going to get a catch, or two, they're going to get a penalty. So if you're looking at that from a coaching perspective, those are two good things that can possibly happen, right? And so they just made sure that they forced him to cover the whole 53 yards of the field and make a tackle or get a holding call. So from that standpoint, they like what they see because of the amount of stress it causes on him and the rest of that secondary.
I really like Trey Amos, the rookie corner. He looks like he's going to be a really good player. Hit a PBU on the fourth down on the opening drive. Otherwise, Green Bay scores a touchdown there. He did get, you know, jammed in the neck and head at one point. It looked like, you know, it was kind of a truck stick from Jordan Love where, you know, technique wasn't great. He kind of lowers his helmet facing down to the ground in a way you're not teaching him to do at Stonebridge.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, right? Because quarterbacks for more times than not are off limits, especially when they start running to the sideline, right? And so what are you really supposed to do? Because we've seen flag after flag when you physically hit a quarterback out of the pocket, right? So it's natural. If you just go back, it's natural for a defender to kind of let up with the expectation that a quarterback is going to run out of the pocket, especially in that situation, right? So I just think it's one of those things where they put a ton of stress on the defenders to, it's such a small margin that they give them to be correct that I think you're going to start seeing this more and more and more. And they try to put in rules to make it seem fair, but it's really not. For all intents and purposes, every other quarterback runs out of bounds, because when you really start to hit them, obviously, the league wants to protect quarterbacks because they're the faces of the leagues and the faces of the franchise. But at the same token, what is that guy supposed to do in that split second? He's not expecting that quarterback to lower his shoulder and run him over.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I don't know how DBs do it at this point in the league. Between that, with the quarterbacks, like if you shove them at the sideline, you're getting a flag. But if you don't, they tuck it upfield and get another 3 yards. They take advantage of that. Same with sliding and not sliding. You see these guys, who was it? Was it Baker Mayfield who perfected this and has talked about it? But like the fake slide where you're about to go down, you kind of stutter step and then everyone lets up, but then you keep running. I mean, they're definitely basically taking advantage of, you know, what they're afforded as protected players. And that might have been an example. I didn't even consider it in real time, but I think you're probably right. That could be an example of, if that's another player, he's coming up and walloping him. Instead, he's just kind of flat-footed, laying back. And then Jordan Love delivers the boom. But I thought overall, Amos, again, had some really good reps. He had a PBU in the middle of the field as well. That was impressive. Defensively, though, to me, the theme was a week after, I say a week, week two, but really a few days after, getting more pressures against the Giants than they had in any game last year and not having to rush more than four. You know, they rushed more than four on only 29% of snaps against the Giants, and yet they got pressure on Russell Wilson on 42% of dropbacks. So they were able to plenty of times just rush four and get home. I just didn't think there was enough harassment of Jordan Love. I don't know what you thought about that, but Dorrance Armstrong's one sack was a nice play by him, but it was kind of Love got beat. He came free and he dropped 13 yards behind the line of scrimmage and got, you know, two-hand touched on the ground. And then there was the one play where they disguised some coverage and fooled him, and he had to pull the ball down and kind of pat the football. And that's when Jacob Martin and Von Miller got home to share a sack. But otherwise, you know, just looking at the pressure counts tonight and the quarterback hits essentially on the defensive stat sheet, I mean, they're too few and far between. One for Quan Martin on a blitz on a throwaway, one for Armstrong on the sack, one for Martin and Miller on their sacks. Otherwise, Jordan Love didn't get touched tonight.
No, he was clean. You know what I mean? He was comfortable. He was clean. He was confident. He was so confident he figured he'd run over a defensive back at some point in the game. So that's obviously not what you want out of this defensive front with the type of talent and what they've shown us they can do, like you said, against the New York Giants. And it's hard, you know, and that's why defensive linemen, defensive tackles, that's why you go out there and get a Von Miller to speed up the quarterback's process. It happened tonight, and you know, there's you know, reasons, you know, fundamentally or whatever that they'll be able to look and learn and grow from. But there's really nothing to say about it except they didn't make the quarterback feel uncomfortable enough, and maybe that was because they never got in the rhythm with some of the, you know, was there true drop back? Was there true 5-7 step? Or if you go back and look at it, was Love getting rid of the ball just in timing? you know, regardless. If the quarterback throws in time, then it's going to be hard to sack him regardless. If the offensive lineman gets beat now, if he catches the ball, he throws in timing. But there were some deeper throws, so you would think that. But they had some speed. Their hats off the Green Bay's wide receivers. They had a few guys hurt, but those replacements came in and they played and you know, definitely had the speed. So defensive line, you know, has to be better. I think they'd be the first ones to say it. But, you know, like I said earlier, Green Bay obviously knew how and what they wanted to attack. I mean, the tight end for them had 100-plus yards. You know, really, I think if anybody's a player of the game, it's him because, you know, he was, you know, setting edges in the run game, knocking people off the ball and breaking tackles and getting open, creating separation. So, you know, he seems to be, you know, a guy that created some matchups that didn't really go in our favor.
Yeah, Tucker Kraft, 6 for 124, 7 targets and a touchdown, but up. I want to talk about 124 yards from the tight end position. How about 57 on one play in the seam where it just seemed like he was running forever? All right, kind of wrapping this up then, Ked, final thoughts here. Out of week one, it felt like, wow, this team is really good. Now the overreaction this week is going to be, woof, that was a cold water game, and you played this elite team in the NFC, and that looked really, really bad. It's almost like it wasn't as good against the Giants as we thought. Maybe it's not as bad as it looks against the Packers, and they're somewhere in the middle. But you know how we ride the roller coaster as a fan base and as a media early in the season? I mean, how do you make sense of two very, very different outings for this team through two games?
You know, if you go back to the Giants game, you know, we knew it was a sloppy win, but you should win games that are sloppy. This one, you know, Green Bay never really opened the door to that. You know, I thought Washington, if you they had their moments to kind of get it to a possession. Green Bay did a good job on the fourth down stop. There we missed a field goal. I believe what was that right before halftime. So they never really got that shot to kind of get it into a one possession game. And you know, this time last year when they lost to Tampa Bay, everybody was like, oh, here we go again. You know, all the stuff was said, and little did we know we had a team that would compete for the NFC Championship game, right? So there's still a lot of learning. There's still a lot of growing that the players are going to do, that the coaches are going to do, that this team is going to do. So it's never as good as you think it is, and it's never as bad as you think it is. So the good thing now is they have a few extra days of rest until Vegas comes into town. And we'll line it back up and kind of see what they do from there. But, you know, I think my confidence is that the people that are running this organization, the people that are coaching these players, and these players have proven that they will right ships and that they have a plan that they can go out there and execute.
They got to get healthy here, and they got a mini bye to do it. But Noah Brown with the groin, Jonathan Jones with a hamstring, John Bates with the groin, seemed like the injuries worth monitoring, where maybe guys could come back sooner. Obviously, we'll get more word on Dietrich Wise with the quad, and then Austin Eckler, presumably with an Achilles or some type of lower leg issue. It seemed like, you know, pretty significant injury to him. So those are the real bummers, and those are the bigger, more long-lasting losses. But the final score, 27-18 from Lambeau Field. The Packers beat the Commanders, and Washington's offense, through two games now, still trying to find its stride defensively. You know, they have some cold water poured on them after what was just a suffocating effort against the Giants. Big thanks to Kedrick Golston hanging out tonight in for Logan Paulson. I'm Grant Paulson for Take Command. We'll be back at it with Logan's film breakdown after he goes over all the tape a little bit later in the week. Thanks for watching on the 106.7 The Fan and Team 980 YouTubes. Of course, you download, subscribe, rate, review the pod, listen wherever you get your audio. We're back in just a couple of days.
What's up, guys? I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. We're heading towards the home stretch of the WNBA season, and there is so much to get into every episode. Twice a week, I'm joined by one of my amazing co-hosts as we dissect the biggest games, performances, and even some off-court drama. The playoffs are quickly approaching, and now is the best time to tune in. Who will come away as this year's champion? The competition is heating up, and so are we. Listen to and follow the Women's Hoop Show, available now wherever you get your podcasts.